BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
This radio show does not aspire to sound like or be like other radio shows. I travel around the country covering sports, and every time I get into a rental car or pull into a new city, I'll flip on the local yokel radio programming. I'll do it this weekend in Indianapolis. So I am heading to Indianapolis for the Big Ten championship game. And I'll do it when I'm in Berkeley. And I'll do it when I'm in LA and Tucson and Salt Lake City and Colorado Springs. And there's a lot of boilerplate stuff going on out there when it comes to sports radio. Just the same old, and forgive me, a lot of it is crap. It really is. It's just regurgitated, probably born from one radio show host growing up listening to radio and going, oh, that's how it should be done. That's what we're supposed to do, and so we'll make it sound like radio. Gosh darn it. Let's talk about the local college team. And I just have never aspired to have this show sound that way. And I think it's part of why the show's lasted. Had a lot of friends in sports radio who have come and went and were watching, I think, in this era in particular, across the country, a lot of radio shows and radio stations under duress and probably making some of the same mistakes that newspapers made years ago. And the media industry is stressed out, and I have a lot of respect for the people out there who are making a lot of those difficult decisions with shows. But this show's never aspired to be anything but itself. And you're part of that. Yesterday was a great example of that, as we did a very different show yesterday. And if you were tuned in yesterday, especially during the 4 o'clock hour, you heard some real heartfelt discussion about the value of co-curricular activities, sports, drama, theater, education, so, you know, classroom supplies and field trips and the value of all that stuff. And it was authentic radio. It was good radio. It was what local radio should be. It should be a conduit between the listener and the host. And maybe if I can visualize what this show, what I want this show to be, is I want it to be a cozy room. We're all sitting around. We're having a conversation. And people are coming and going, but we're having a real conversation. There's some authenticity to it, and we're not trying to sound like other rooms. And it's partly why when consultants will come in, they have over the last 20 years, and I've met with a number of consultants who are high-profile consultants who are very good at what they do, and they come in and they offer input and they offer advice, and I listen to it, and I sort of sort through it in my mind. But ultimately, I know that if this radio show's just got to be what it's got to be, and I'm not a it's got to be my way guy, but I also think this show in part belongs to the listeners. It's why we take lots of calls. I notice a lot of sports radio shows that are local nationally or regional shows like this one is nationally. They don't take calls. They don't want the input from the callers. They don't want to see where the show goes. They're not comfortable having open segments. They want everything to be boilerplate and formulaic, and they want to, let's make it like a pregame show or a postgame show, and that's just not what this radio show is going to be. It's partly why Anna comes on the show. For those of you who don't understand that, if you don't understand kind of the depth and the layer and the nuance of having Anna be part of the show, I can't help you. Maybe the show's not for you. But for those of you who were listening yesterday, in the 4 o'clock hour, as she had kind of an emotional moment talking about her childhood, talking about the escape that those co-curricular activities offered her, or when she's peppering me, I don't always like it, during the 5 at 5, I often have people that will stop me and say, man, that's my favorite part of the show. And guess what? That's way more valuable to me than some consultant who's talking to me trying to get this radio show to sound like everything else across the country. It's just not going to do that. We're going to take calls. It's why the phone lines are open now at 503-417-7575. And we're going to have the callers call in and steer the show at times. And it will go where it goes. You're not going to take the show over, but you're part of the show. You play a role like an orchestra here. You are, some of you are more like the string section of the orchestra. Others like the brass. We got some drummers that call in, but you're all part of the orchestra of this show. We have a great program for you today. We are going to be talking to coaches on today's show. And I would challenge you to find a radio show, regional, local, that will have a better guest lineup than we have today. We're going to visit with Joseph Smith, who is the Linfield football coach. They're in the quarterfinals of the Division III playoffs. He's going to join us this hour. And I'm going to ask Joseph Smith, the Linfield coach, because all Linfield does is win and win and win. They've got a big quarterfinal game coming up in their playoffs, but they've been part of the playoffs for years and years and years. I'm going to ask Joseph Smith if he's got advice for our guest in the 4 o'clock hour, Dan Lanning. Oregon football coach Dan Lanning will be joining us at 4:20. Be here for that. Does Joseph Smith at Linfield, who's been through a playoff, have any advice for Dan Lanning at Oregon, who's about to go through a 12-team playoff for the first time? The D3s, they've been doing this. They know the pace. They know the demands. They know, hey, can we look ahead? Can we not look ahead? Can you scout ahead? Can you not scout ahead? I'll ask Joseph Smith if he can help sort of create some advice for Dan Lanning. And if he offers some advice, I'll give it to Dan Lanning in the 4 o'clock hour. So I hope you're here and stay with us through that Dan Lanning interview. It'll be a good, chunky, valuable piece of real estate. And I have so many questions for Dan Lanning at 4:20. Because when I go to Indianapolis and I get in late Friday night, and on Saturday morning I'm having coffee with Dan Lanning's dad, Don. And you know what Don tells me? Don says, hey, Dan's going to be busy on Saturday. And I'm like, no kidding. Then he's like, hey, if you're around, why don't we meet for coffee? So I'm having coffee with Dan Lanning's dad. I wonder if he knows that. We're going to get some state secrets potentially during that portion of the festivities. But Oregon's got a big football game. I want to talk about the championship games. We'll talk a little bit about the NFL. We are not going to sound like other radio shows. Sorry. That's what you want. If you want radio guy voice, I'm not going to give you that radio guy voice. We're just going to be who we are in this radio program. The phone number is 503-417-7575. And the question today off the top of the show is, of the championship games this weekend, you got the Mountain West Conference Championship with UNLV and Boise State. You have the Big 12 Conference Championship with Iowa State and Arizona State. You have the ACC Championship with SMU and Clemson. You have the SEC Championship with Georgia and Texas. And you have the Big 10 Championship with Oregon and Penn State. Of those games, you tell me which game you find most interesting and intriguing. And you tell me which game you think is the easiest game to offer a prediction on. Do you see one that jumps out at you? Because on one hand, I see one that jumps out at me, and I'm wondering why I'm the only person that sees it. And I'll share what I mean by that coming up. But the phone number is 503-417-7575. I thank everybody who participated yesterday as part of the BFT Foundation Radiothon and Auction. Fun show yesterday. A lot of emotion, a lot of passion. Warms my heart, gives me glassy eyes. I told Robert Dove, who is basically the czar of the radio cluster at 750 The Game and Alpha Media. I told Robert Dove, I said, man, thank you for that platform. Grateful for it. Grateful for the opportunity to reach so many people and do so much good. And Alpha over the years has just opened its arms and been such a good partner as it comes to the BFT Foundation and buying into the community. And it really is different than a lot of other places. So I'm grateful for that. But it was a big day yesterday. Everybody who made bids, everybody who bought auction items, everybody who bought Blazer tickets or called in and make a donation or got online and made a donation at baldfacetruth.org. You can still do that. You can, you know, if you feel moved and you just were busy yesterday, you can go to baldfacetruth.org. And the money that is given today and tomorrow will still be added to the tally for the Radiothon and auction. So you can still click that link. It'll stay up for a couple days. So baldfacetruth.org if you want to get involved. But thank you so much for doing that. And I'm appreciative of the volunteers who were in studio, who were taking, you know, information over the phones from people who called in, wanted to make donations. It really is a team effort, and I appreciate that. And I know that it was a busy day yesterday for the people on the phones. So thanks to them. Stephen Vaughn, you're in studio. My question to the audience, of those championship games coming up this weekend, which one's the most interesting? And is there a game that jumps off the page at you as, hey, I know what's going to happen in that game?
Yeah, there is. The most interesting game to me is Clemson-SMU. Just because of what we've heard about SMU and what a lot of people are saying, are they good? And do they deserve to be number 8? Should they be above Alabama? I hope just for the drama that Clemson wins this game so we can see exactly what happens when they move SMU down below Alabama and just hear the outrage for it. I can't wait for that. Like, that's what I want to have happen. I think it will. I think Clemson's going to win this game. So that's why that game intrigues me so much, John, is because if SMU just comes out and dominates this game and dominates a Clemson team who has been dominated by Georgia, they've had some close calls. They haven't been great this season, 9-3. SMU comes out and wins this game by a lot. I think it's going to change the tune of a lot of people, the way they talk.
Right.
But if they lose, that is going to cause so much drama for the rankings. I can't wait for that. I don't know why, but why is Boise State only like a 3.5 favorite over UNLV?
So that one jumps out at
that
you.
That one jumps out at me, John. Like, it's at you. It's at, or is that Boise State? Boise State already beat UNLV earlier this season at UNLV. The point spread was the exact same as it was there as it is now in Boise. And the degree is going to be like 30 degrees out. Ashton Dente has something to play for, still playing for that Heisman. Winner gets into the playoff. I don't get that one. This seems like a Boise State win by at least a touchdown.
I am thinking that the chatter that's going on right now nationally, and everybody's got their propaganda boots on, that Brett Yormark, the Big 12 commissioner, being the loudest of all in the last 24 hours, he's going at a couple of things. He's going at the Group of Five champion, Boise State, potentially, and saying that the Big 12 champion should be in front of them and have the bye. He's also kind of picking at Clemson and some of the three-loss teams, saying anybody with three losses should be seated below the Big 12 champion. Here's Brett Yormark.
ASU and ISU each played 10 games against the Big 12, SEC, and Big 10. Winning both P4 non-conference games against the SEC and the Big 10, and winning 7 of 9 P4 conference games. Boise played one game against the Big 10 and lost. And that was their only P4 opponent. The committee clearly focuses on the wins and loss column. Going by that principle, no three-loss team from a Power 4 conference should get a bye over a two-loss champion from the Big 12. I'm going to say that again. No three-loss team from a Power 4 conference should get a bye over a two-loss champion.
Yormark kind of mixing his message there. You know, he starts in on Boise State, and then he kind of layers it by saying nobody with three losses should get a bye. So he's kind of setting up the idea that if Clemson at 9-3 beats SMU and Clemson would be the ACC champion, they should not get a bye over the Big 12 champion. And then he's kind of picking at Boise State. Now he leaves out, there's some apples and oranges comparison going on here, because we can have a debate, and I'm sure the selection committee is doing this, about whether or not the Big 12 conference opponents, just because they have the air quotes label of Power 4, Power 4 doesn't exist. It doesn't really have any authority and any meaning beyond, we're just talking about one of the Big 4 conferences. But we can argue within the Big 12 that the Big 12 is the weakest of the Power 4 conferences. And also, he leaves out that Boise State played both Oregon State and Washington State, which are coming off of a Power 5 conference and are funding like Power 4 schools. So he conveniently leaves that off because it doesn't fit his argument. But he's certainly going at the committee here. And here's what I think. I think all of the chatter, to your point about Clemson and SMU, I think all of the chatter about this is really going to make SMU bear down. I like SMU in that ACC championship game. And partly is, I mentioned this in print at johnconzano.com, but SMU played Stanford in the middle of the regular season. I was really into that game because I was curious about SMU because they had really started playing well. And Rhett Lashley, the coach at SMU, I was watching him going, this guy's going to be a sneaky, good hire for somebody in December or January if SMU doesn't extend his contract. The beginning of that Stanford game, SMU throws three touchdown passes of 38 yards or longer, and they go on to win the game 40-10. Complete knockout. And at that point, I went, wow, SMU, that looked like a contender taking care of a very mediocre, if not bad, Stanford team. I was not surprised to see SMU just roll after that because they looked like they were a machine. They, like, you know, when you see a really good team playing against a mediocre or a bad team and it's 40-10 and it's just smothering, it just jumps out at you. Now, Clemson also played Stanford and also had a very similar result. It was 40-14. But I watched that game too, and anybody who saw that game knows that the end result, you know, 40-10 in SMU's case, 40-14 in Clemson's case, looks very similar on paper. But that SMU Stanford game was a no contest. Clemson Stanford was 17-7 at halftime. Stanford turned the ball over three times in the red zone against Clemson in the game. Stanford first downed Clemson 20-18 in the game. And I left going, gosh, SMU is just so much better than Clemson. And here they are. I was really surprised not to see Miami in this game because I thought it was going to be Miami and SMU. And instead, it's Clemson and SMU because Miami tripped. So I think barring turnovers, SMU has got all this talk out there about how they don't belong. They're not good enough. If they don't win this game, they shouldn't be ranked ahead of Alabama. I just have a sneaking suspicion that SMU is going to show up to play in that ACC championship game. I agree with you. I think it's so interesting. It's fascinating because of the tentacles it has with the playoffs. Now, I see the Boise game the way you do as well. Boise's at home. Boise already beat UNLV. Boise's got an extra day of rest. They played Friday. UNLV played Saturday. This, to me, that Mountain West game feels like, you know, what am I not seeing that everybody else is seeing? Why is that only 4 points? I completely agree with you that game sort of looks a little wonky as it pertains to, the point spread. But the game to me that just jumps out and screams that, you know, that I'm the only one that's seeing it this way is Georgia at Texas in the SEC championship game Saturday on ABC. Georgia's the visiting team in this game because Texas is 11-1 and Georgia's 10-2. But this game's at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, where Georgia has frequently played in recent years. Big games, too. This is a home game for Kirby Smart. Now, Georgia went on the road against Texas and won this game in the regular season, and it wasn't close to me. It was 30-15. Texas had 38 yards of offense in the first half in the game. It was a jarring setback for the Longhorns. It was the welcome to the SEC game for the Longhorns. And I can remember that game being, you know, it was a real close spread. It was like 2 or 3 points, right? This one is also 2 or 3 points, and Texas is favored. And I get it. Texas, you know, Georgia had the Georgia Tech 8 overtime games a week ago. There's been some shaky moments for the Bulldogs this season. But give me Georgia all day long in this game. I think Georgia makes a statement at home, air quotes there, against Texas on Saturday on ABC. 503-417-7575. Tell me what jumps out at you. And which game is the most interesting? I'm also into the Big Ten championship game. Penn State's at Oregon. 5 p.m. Saturday on CBS. Penn State very physical. Oregon very physical. I think this game's going to look a little like a tug of war at times. But I went and did some research on big plays, chunk plays. I looked at how many 10-plus yard plays the Oregon offense had. How many 10-plus yard plays Penn State's offense had. It was very similar. I went to 20 yards, still was kind of similar, Penn State and Oregon. Where they really start to separate is when you get to 40, 50, and 60-yard plays. Playmakers who can rip off a 50 or 60-yard play. Oregon has 4 scoring plays of 60-plus yards this season. Penn State has 1. Now, there are 2 things that make a team great. Difference-making playmakers and difference-making depth. Oregon has both. Penn State has maybe depth. I think Oregon's got the playmakers in this game. I think it's why Oregon's going to cover the 3-point spread. How do you see? I think you like Penn State, Stephen. We disagree on this one.
Yeah, I do like Penn State in this one. I do think that Oregon, this is a whole thing about college football this season. Who's good in this season? Is any of these teams actually good?
And we'll find out. Nobody's good.
Exactly.
None of them are good.
None are good. None are great. We can all make arguments for everything because who has Oregon actually played? We all want to trash Ohio State for losing to Michigan. Well, that was the best game that Oregon's played. They won because Will Howard didn't slide 2 seconds earlier. Had he slid 4 yards earlier, Oregon loses that game to Ohio State. Then what are we thinking about Oregon? So we can make that argument. Penn State probably should have beaten Ohio State in Happy Valley. They had first and goal inside the 5, and they just really just messed that up, didn't score a touchdown, or else they would have won that game. I also look at James Franklin. He had the stigma that Dan Lanning's kind of gotten rid of this year, as he can't win the big game. Well, John, here's James Franklin's record at Penn State, 99-40 overall. You know what he is against Ohio State, Michigan? 4-17.
Oof.
So he's 95-23 against everybody.
So what makes
else.
You think he can win this game?
Because it's not Ohio State or Michigan. I understand
it's
the Ducks,
Oregon.
The
it's
Ducks
Oregon.
Are on that level,
Come
John.
On.
But it's different. He's beaten everybody else. So why would this matter? Why is this different? I just feel like this is
because he's not playing anybody else. He's playing a team that's got difference-making playmakers and difference-making depth. I mean,
Usually, Ohio State and Michigan, they're going to try to be, the more physical team and do all those kinds of things. So Oregon's going to win because of big plays. I don't see that happening. I see it because they out-physical Penn State, just like Ohio State and Michigan has. It's just interesting to me that that's how it is. James Franklin's beating everybody. Can't beat those two. Oregon's not one of those two. We'll see if that matters.
Well, we will find out. I think the beginning of that game and at times during that game, you're going to see a lot of 2- and 3-yard runs, right? You're going to see a lot of tug-of-war. But I think Oregon's got the bigger playmakers, and at the end of the game, when we tally up the 20-plus yard plays, the 30-plus yard plays, the 50-plus yard plays, I think Oregon's going to have far more of those than Penn State has, and I think that's the difference in the game. But I don't know what the over-under is on that one, but I could see that game being, Oregon in the 20s, Penn State in the high teens, low 20s. I think it could be 27-20. I think it could be 24-17. It could be that kind of game. But I think it'll be a great game by those standards. We'll talk to Dan Lanning about it coming up an hour from now. But next, you're going to hear from Joseph Smith at Linfield. He's the coach at Linfield. Last week in their second-round game in the Day 3 playoffs, Linfield led 51-3 at halftime. What was the halftime message from Joseph Smith to his team? This week, they've got a team and an opponent in the quarterfinals that's got multiple national championships, a very different order for Linfield. They'll be at home at noon on Saturday. Their head coach, Joseph Smith, I'll ask him if he's got advice for Dan Lanning, because after all, Smith's been in playoffs. Linfield's been in playoffs. Dan Lanning going to have his first potential exposure to a 12-team playoff coming up here in just a few weeks. So Joseph Smith coming up next, Linfield coach.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750, The Game.
All Linfield University does is win and win and win when it comes to the college football Division III playoffs. Last week against Texas Lutheran, it was 51-3 at halftime, 65-3 is your final score. And Linfield moves on, advancing to the quarterfinals of the Division III playoffs, where they'll play Mary Hardin Baylor on Saturday at noon. It is a home game. Here to talk about it, Joseph Smith, Linfield's football coach. Coach, how you doing today?
Doing great, thank you.
Hey, Division III playoffs. You've got Mary Hardin Baylor coming up noon kickoff on Saturday. Give us an idea. This will be on ESPN Plus as well, so people can check out the game. But last week wasn't much of a game. I was kind of tracking it from a distance. You had a big halftime lead. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was great. We probably had one of the finest halves of football I think one of our programs has had in 20 years, to be honest. So we came out and we had that bye week and had 2 weeks to prepare and really executed well and hit on all cylinders and all three phases. I think we're winning, so I'm not sure we could have done much better. So that's how every game is supposed to go in terms of the plan. But rarely does it go that way, and certainly on Saturday was a heck of a day for us.
65-3 was the final. At halftime, you come in, you've got this, you know, this big lead. What's your message at halftime to the team to kind of keep it focused?
Well, I can't remember the exact score at halftime. I want to say it was, we might have put 50 points up, you know, it might have 49 or 50 something points. So, you know, we're always really honest with our guys. You know, I told them, hey, the game's over. We're going to set our starters, and we played the second string guys the whole second half and said, now is your time to play. So expectations are the same. And you know, the guys went out and played real well. We still, I think, won the second half too, but certainly not by the same margin. But, you know, the backup guys deserve a chance to play, and they got their opportunity.
Yeah, 51-3 at halftime. We're talking to Joseph Smith, Linfield football coach. You beat Texas Lutheran in the second round of the Division III tournament, and now you get a third-round home game against a team that's got some national championships in its past. You know, if you can, maybe talk a little bit about, you know, Mary Harden-Baylor.
Absolutely. Well, Mary Harden-Baylor's been a team we know exceptionally well. It seems like almost every year the playoffs, certainly since, gosh, the late 2000s, have been going through them, and we've matched up quite often. I don't know, 8-9 times it seems like, something like that. That could be an exaggeration, but it seems like that. And we know them well, and they're definitely the kings of Texas. You know, the TLU was a fine football team, but they certainly are not in the same category as the talent that the crew bring to bear. So, very big, physical, fast team. Typically the fastest and biggest. You know, that's sort of what they make their living on up front. So, very physically imposing up front, and it's very difficult to move the ball, let alone score on their defense. They're quite formidable in that fashion. So they have our full attention, and I know we have theirs. So should be one heck of a matchup.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm looking at the bracket here, and I'm looking at the calendar, and, you know, I've got a daughter who's a college kid, and she's focused on finals right now and some papers. And, you know, I know the upper division is expanding this playoff to 12 teams. You guys at the D3 level have been doing this for a while. How do you manage sort of that academic thing with athletes with this tournament that goes on?
Well, that's a great question. I'm honestly quite worried about it. I think the years that we've had long playoff runs, which have been often, but those years we do feel it, you know, in the GPA category. It is difficult for the guys to keep focused on their grades when, you know, they tangibly are in the playoffs, et cetera. So, you know, hopefully our guys have had good time management all semester, because you just can't save poor grades at the end. You know, you can manage them and keep your grades up, but it's very difficult to improve them late. So hopefully our guys have already done the work, and now they got to finish through finals and projects, because, yes, this is the last week of classes and finals are next week. So, you know, we definitely have to finish strong in the classroom. It is difficult for the student athletes. I feel for them.
Yeah, but when the, you know, I'm looking at Oregon's season, there's a chance they could play like 16 or 17 games, right, and have this really long season. And I think for years D2 and D3 have been doing this. I think there's some things you could probably teach the people who are you shaking your head at all at the kind of the back and forth that goes on and all the propaganda with the selection committee and every Tuesday night? Because you guys seem to have figured that out.
Well, I don't know, you know, if we have any answers, but I do know that the problems that they're talking about are certainly not unique, and people like you mentioned have dealt with those for many years. So I think it's time management. You got to deal with that for your student athletes. But as far as the rankings and who are the best teams and the seedings, oh goodness, you know, there's controversy at every level with that. And I can only imagine everyone's got an opinion, and rightly so. So that's quite a mess.
You guys have this game coming up Saturday for people who want to check it out. It is a home game in the quarterfinals against Mary Harden-Baylor. I'm looking at the bracket. I can look ahead. You don't want your players to do that, but semifinal would be potentially against Johns Hopkins and DePauw winner, and then there would be a championship game. Do you start scouting? Does someone on your staff start scouting? Is that, or do you just actually take it step to step?
you know, we really try to just take it step by step. I think, you know, our logistics crew are going to start looking at what those trips might look like. You know, I actually know where those places are now. You know, I've tried to look ahead and figure out, you know, geez, what town would we be going to, you know, what city. And so I think you have to be prepared a little bit because it's very difficult to plan a trip on Sunday, you know, and have that all done on Monday. And so I think, yeah, you need to have a little forethought. But as far as schematics, no, we're locked in on Mehrhorn Baylor. They're just too good not to be. So it's going to take all hands on deck and all effort, you know, mentally and physically on game planning and trying to prepare the guys to be the best we can be on Saturday. So it's all focus on the Crusaders.
I can remember years ago having Brett Elliott, you know, a former Linfield quarterback, on the show kind of talking about being a player. And now he's a quarterback coach, offensive coordinator with the program. You know, we talked last time about the culture and the culture keepers. You're one of those people. But what is that like to have players who come back and have been around the program, you know, for extended periods of time?
Well, it's pivotal for us. I mean, the secret of Linfield is we've had Linfield players come back and coach for us. I mean, the majority of my staff all played here, and not everybody, but quite a large amount of them, and they're the guys willing to do it for no money, pretty much, right? So, out of loyalty. So, but I'm really proud of that. And Brett's had such an impact on this program. You know, he not only as a player, but certainly now as a coach. And he got to coach my son Wyatt, you know, at quarterback, and then recruit my younger son Colton, you know, at receiver, and got to coach all them. And now those guys are both helping us coach too. So, you know, that's how I think a good program sustains itself at these levels is out of loyalty and perpetuating the things that have made your program strong. You know, year in, year out, those perpetuated cycles of behavior. So I think that's the secret of our program and its success, and Brett's a giant part of that.
Joseph Smith, Linfield football coach, is our guest. The Wildcats have advanced to the quarterfinals. They'll play at noon on Saturday. Blake Eaton, your starting quarterback, 5 touchdowns all in the first half last week. That must have been fun. I mean, when you're playing football and things are working and you're moving the ball, and I don't want to say it's like 7-on-7, but that must have been a lot of fun for Blake and the offense to see that happen.
Well, it really was. And you know, like in basketball, when those shooters get hot and they just feel like they can hit any shot, that's really the rhythm that Blake got into. And boy, he hit some wonderful passes right on the money, hit guys in stride. And that's why you see the terrific offensive output, because not only were they completions, but then they, you know, were long runs after the catch plays because of that. So he had a phenomenal game. He was spot on.
All right, so give me an idea. I've got Dan Lanning coming on the show coming up at 4:20 today. And do you have any advice for a coach who's gone round, around, around? You've been in these playoff scenarios. You've navigated it successfully. Any advice you would give, not just to Lanning, but coaches in general who find themselves in a bracket where you've got to win 4 or 5 games to win the title?
Well, Coach Lanning's a great coach, and he doesn't need any advice from me. But, you know, the Oregon coaches I've got to know over the years, I've felt very highly on all of them. You know, there may be a few that got let go early that we all necessarily didn't love. But the guys that were there for a long time were all good coaches, and they know the same thing he does. He's been around winners. You focus on the game at hand, and you prepare your guys for that opponent, and you got to block out everything else. So.
Joseph Smith, good luck to you Saturday, and we'll be talking to you. Let's keep the karma going. We'll talk to you in front of the semifinals as well.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate all you do for Oregon.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate you, Coach.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Coming up at 4:20, it'll be Dan Lanning, Oregon coach. We go from one playoff bracket to another. We might as well get into the Division II brackets as well, as long as we're talking about it. The bald-faced truth all over it, and it's BFT karma. It was brought to my attention today. Kenny Dillingham, the Arizona State coach, the Big 12 Conference Coach of the Year. Doug Tamrow, the Sports Information Director at Arizona State, tweeting at me saying, hey, this is a guy you've had on your show multiple times. It's BFT karma. Coaches keep coming on the show. Their teams keep winning. I want you to leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. Our big splash is coming up.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Dan Lanning coming up, 4:20. Make an appointment. Tell a Duck fan friend who would enjoy hearing a Dan Lanning interview that we will have him exclusively right here at 4:20 as the Ducks prepare to go to Indianapolis. I wrote it today at johnconzano.com that I was on the field at Lucas Oil Stadium in July as part of the Big Ten Conference Football Media Days, and Dan Lanning was standing in the middle of the field that he will coach on Saturday night. And I saw him, and he was supposed to do an interview with me in about 10 minutes, but he was just standing out in the middle of the field. So I kind of walked over to him and, you know, said hi to him. I hadn't seen him in a while. And then I said, hey, let me take a quick photo of you out here in the middle of the field. And he kind of, it's a weird thing. He was kind of embarrassed, and he was sheepish about it. And I said, come on, get down in a stance, get in a three-point stance. And he wouldn't do it. He was like, no, I'm not getting in a stance. And then I snapped the picture, and the picture, I used it today as the photo of my championship week predictions that I published at johnconzano.com. You can check out that photo if you want to see the photo. It's also on the socials if you want to check out Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and Blue Sky. I'm all over the place right now. But Dan Lanning coming up at 4:20. I'll ask him same question I asked our last guest. And by the way, are there similarities? Are there things that coaches at the D3 level, there's not a lot of similarity between Division III and Division I major college football, right? Like the playoff, the college football playoff with 12 teams and the D3 playoff with Linfield is participating in. There are some things that are different. Competition's different. The stage is different. It's not ESPN Plus is way different than being on CBS for a Big Ten championship and then ESPN for the playoff and all that. You know, the week-to-week, playoff committee, selection committee reveal, part of the problem as I see it, I think it creates a lot of belly aching. It's almost like the NBA players that are complaining about not getting calls every trip down the court. Where every time the selection committee releases a poll, everybody's complaining like they're NBA players trying to get a call in the next release of the rankings. I think if you do it one time, you get less complaining. But are there things that Dan Lanning could learn from Linfield's coach, Joseph Smith? How to kind of get your team ready, and Smith saying, hey, it's 1 week at a time, 1 game at a time. I don't know. Maybe I think a lot of this is going to feel new, because if Oregon wins on Saturday and they're the Big Ten champion, they get a first-round bye. They're going to be the one seed in the playoff. They won't play again until January 1st in the Rose Bowl. If they lose, they will play on December 19th or 20th at Autzen Stadium, hosting a home game, likely as the 5 seed. It's different calculus. And so I'll ask Lanning, too, you know, has he given any thought to that? Because he's not going to really have control over whether they end up hosting a game or they get the bye and go to the playoff. Like, he's got to prepare for both scenarios, doesn't he? In one hand, he's got to sell to his team, no matter what happens on Saturday, they very quickly have to regroup. And it's very different than prior years where if you won a conference championship, you got to take a victory lap. And then you had several weeks off, and then, okay, the 14 playoff, or you're going to a bowl game. And this is going to be different, yeah, because immediately after the Big Ten championship game, the losing team is going to have to get ready to host a game in the first round of the playoff that will take place 12 days later. And the winning team is going to get about 24 days off and a chance to really exhale. So Dan Lanning at 4:20, talked to him about that, among other things. This brings us to our big splash. We do it every day on the show, like clockwork. We're good for a big splash. The one story that you need to know.
The one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
Must be.
The Big Splash. Brought to you by Keller Burger, home of the peanut butter pickle bacon burger, and voted best burger 5 years in a row. Keller Burger, the burgers your mama warned you about.
72-year-old Bill Belichick has been out of football since leaving the Patriots after winning 6 Super Bowls. Belichick interviewed with North Carolina about the Tar Heels' head coach opening. ESPN reporting that today. He interviewed for several NFL head coaching jobs last offseason. It's not told whether, North Carolina is really considering Belichick or just being polite by interviewing him, but they're looking to find a replacement for Mack Brown. Would they replace one older head coach with another older head coach? The ACC school announced right around Thanksgiving that Mack Brown would not return to the program next season. Then he went out and lost to rival NC State in his final game. They finished 6-6. Freddie Kitchens, the former Cleveland Browns coach who served as North Carolina's run game coordinator the last two seasons, is serving as the interim head coach while the school seeks a replacement for Brown. Bill Belichick interviewing with UNC for the job. Do you hire Bill Belichick if you're a college? I mean, in one hand, the college game is fashioning itself to be the NFL or the NFL's minor league system or another version of the NFL, and certainly player personnel has become a part of the college game. And so I think Bill Belichick, you know, maybe there's something to hiring a guy who knows how they do it in the NFL. I also think maybe the idea of playing for Bill Belichick would be attractive to some players. Then conversely, I start to look at Bill Belichick at age 72, although he is dating young, and I say to myself, is Bill Belichick going to have the energy? Is he going to have the connection with 17, 18, 19-year-old kids that he's trying to recruit? Is he going to be able to do the kinds of things that Dan Lanning and Kenny Dillingham and other young head coaches are doing in sort of being more like the recruits than ever? 72-year-old Belichick, you know, he made hay in the NFL by kind of being, you know, Bill Belichick at the top of the pyramid. Would Bill Belichick's act work in college athletics? We may find out. North Carolina has interviewed Bill Belichick about their head coach opening. Steven, would you take him as a serious candidate, or is this just North Carolina being polite?
I don't think Belichick really would want to coach college. Like, I think it's too much of a load and it's too much non-football stuff. Like, Belichick is a football guy that wants to come up with schemes and wants to come up with game plans. He's doing great on TV, like talking about that kind of stuff and showing what he does. But we've seen numerous college coaches, college head coaches, go to the NFL to be coordinators, or we saw Chip Kelly go be a coordinator at Ohio State because they were tired of the role of the head coach in college football, which isn't about coaching. It's not about this X's and O's. It's about being on the road, and it's about game planning, recruiting, and not about game planning. It's about talking to the boosters and going to events. Does Belichick really want to do that? Like, I don't think he does. I mean, I don't know, but it seems like at his age, he would more just want to, you know, go to an NFL team and run that system and do that kind of thing. But I do say, you make a good point of college football is turning into the NFL. You need that figurehead. What better one can you have than Bill Belichick, a guy that's won so many Super Bowls? So I don't think he's a real candidate, but I think if he wants the job, like, North Carolina would have to give it to him. Like, he's that kind of guy.
Here's my thing. When coaches don't work out, when you fire a coach, you fire Mack Brown, who's 73 years old.
You're getting young with Belichick, 72.
You are going 180 degrees in another direction. You will see programs when they try a defensive-minded coach, doesn't work. What do? They hire an offensive mind in the next cycle. When they hire a guy who's been with them as an alma mater, it's you graduated from your school. What do with the next hire? They go way outside the box and they hire somebody who is from another part of the country who brings in new ideas. You're always looking for a correction when you make hires after changing head coaches. Now, I'm not talking about a contingency plan where, hey, this has been working really well, when you hand the keys to the next guy in line. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying when you fire Mack Brown, who's 73 and is going 6-6 in his last season, you're firing him because you're going, hey, we need somebody who understands the new era of college sports. We need younger ideas. We need younger energy. So I think Carolina's being polite here. I think 72, 73, that's apples to apples.
But if Belichick
I'm looking for a young guy right now.
If he showed interest and he's like, yeah, I want this job.
You interview him. You talk to him.
You wouldn't take him, though?
No. No. What does he know? What does he know about NIL? What does he know about the transfer portal?
You can hire people that know that.
And
stuff.
Do these kids, like, if you walk through the mall with Bill Belichick, you know, I'm impressed with it. Like, you know, some 40-year-old guy's impressed with it. But you walk through the mall.
The kids will be impressed.
Some 19-year-old kid's going to be like, who is that? They don't think of Bill Belichick like the rest of us do. But if you're Carolina, you go through the formality of talking with him. But I just don't think he understands. It could be disastrous. This is how an AD gets fired. You know, you don't need to make this move. You know, let somebody who's really desperate
Herman
make
Edwards
this
like.
Move. Yeah, it's even more desperate than that. I would think Belichick would be right for somebody who is really taking a risk and taking a chance and wants to matter. You know, he could end up at New Mexico. He could end up at San Jose State. That, you know, not at North Carolina.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Oregon football coach Dan Lanning coming up at 4:20. I was reading a story today about the University of Tulsa. Hear what happened to them? University of Tulsa in a big fight with a bunch of players. Players say the coaches on the football team made verbal promises of NIL payments, NIL payments, but they haven't received anything. They used the promise of money as leverage and then just kept saying, we'll get it later, you'll get it at the midseason, you get it at the end of the season. They never got the money. Kevin Wilson, who is the head coach, got fired just before Thanksgiving. Apparently, he was one of the staff members who was making the promises. Wilson came out and told media and said, we had no money. They never had any money. This is going to keep happening and keep happening. That NIL thing is messy. And we're going to see more of that as time unfolds. Eric Bieniemy out at UCLA. He was the offensive coordinator under Deshaun Foster. UCLA will make a change with the coordinator hire. It was a bad hire by Foster. Frankly, Foster was a bad hire because Martin Jarmon, the athletic director, was in such a bad position when Chip Kelly left that he was just trying to retain some roster. Foster and UCLA, I thought they played better than expected, and still it wasn't a great season by UCLA standards, even though UCLA's expectations are fairly low. Dan Lanning coming up at 4:20. We've got Punch It Audio, all the great sound from all around.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, the Ducks are a 3-point favorite, 3.5-point favorite, depending on where you find it, over Penn State on Saturday night. Joel Klatt says he doesn't get it.
So it's a deep team. They can win, you know, a gritty game. They can win a defensive game. They're good on the offensive line. They've got an experienced quarterback. This team is really, really good, which then leads back to my initial comment. Why is this only 3.5? That was a bit surprising to me. Then you look over there with Penn State, and it's like, there's no other way to put it than they were fortunate to get into this game. They've had a very good year. James Franklin and Penn State. Now the question is, can you win the big game? He's 1-14, James Franklin and Penn State, against top five opponents as their head coach. He lost to Ohio State earlier this year. We have talked at length about their struggles against, in previous years, Ohio State and Michigan. Well, Oregon is in that class. They have not proven that in their own conference they can beat a team at the level of Ohio State or Oregon, or in previous years, Michigan.
I think the bigger takeaway is 1-14 from James Franklin, and I agree with Klatt. I expected Oregon to be a little more of a favorite. I have them winning this game by 7, maybe 7-8. It just depends on how many plays the Ducks make. I think they've got the better playmakers in a game that'll feel a lot like a tug of war. Yogi Roth of the Big Ten Network talking about Dan Lanning, Oregon's coach.
And as Dan Lanning said when conference realignment was a real thing, he goes, we're just going to play our brand of football, whatever league we're in, and look at what they've done in this league. And I just go back to my time when I was at SC, or you look at any team that has gone unscathed in the regular season, I mean, it's nearly impossible. It's such a different challenge than if you have a loss, in my opinion. Like, you just have to meet an expectation. You have to navigate the players hearing so many expectations. Dan Lanning's been masterful. It's only his third year ever being a head coach, guys.
I think what Lanning has done with the pregame speeches and the motivation and sort of getting his team to hone in and focus on a week-to-week-to-week basis is the masterful part. He also is managing a team that's got special depth and special talent. So how do you keep guys who aren't maybe getting the reps happy? I'll ask Lanning coming up at 4:20 because I think it's one of the things that goes unspoken. Andrew Luck going to Stanford as a general manager. That's right, player personnel guy now. Here's Andrew Luck.
Yeah, general manager of football. So I oversee and lead the football department. And this is officially day two. So we're getting caught up to speed. I could not be more excited to work with Troy Taylor. He's an innovative offensive mind. I think he's laid the groundwork for sustained success here. I couldn't be more excited to work with the rest of the coaching staff, the players on the team. I mean, it's a hot and heavy recruiting cycle right now. I am learning a lot on the fly. It's a little bit of drinking from the fire hose. I'll be honest, I think I feel like a rookie again in the NFL. And I remember, you know, Bruce Arians having very colorful allegories for what it was like to be a rookie that I can't repeat on your show. But I keep thinking of those because I haven't felt this combination of excitement and also being overwhelmed. I mean, it's incredible, but just trying to play my part, trying to be a good team player.
Only Stanford's GM would use allegories in a conversation about being the GM. I love that. Andrew Luck back in the fold at Stanford. That's not a bad thing.
How common is this going to be for college football programs to get a general manager, quote-unquote general manager?
Yeah,
now?
You're going to see it. I mean, Herm Edwards tried to do it at Arizona State. And I'll ask Dan Lanning about it. It's more like a GM player personnel department than anything. Andy Staples talking about the job openings or maybe the lack of job openings that he expects this offseason in college football.
This is a weird year, Ryan, because normally, there's a lot more jobs open. And I think a lot of the power conference schools have been afraid to fire their coaches because you've got revenue sharing with the players coming next year, so that you're going to have to devote millions of dollars to that. You don't want to pay these buyouts. Some of the buyouts have gotten so ridiculous that they're almost prohibitive. Like, Kentucky and Mark Stoops don't seem to be on the best terms right now, but they would owe him $44 million within 60 days. Like, he ain't going anywhere if he doesn't want to go somewhere.
Right.
So, like, the best jobs open right now are North Carolina, Purdue, UCF, and West Virginia. And they're still looking for coaches. I think, you know, some of those schools are considering coaches who are coaching in championship games this weekend. So probably get a little movement on that after the weekend.
Look, I think we've been talking about this for weeks, and Staples and others are talking about it as well now, because the programs are more worried. The athletic directors are worried about revenue sharing. What they don't want to have to do is end up with an extra expense on their books. And that's what firing your coach causes. You're not just paying a buyout and firing a coach. You're having to hire an incredible amount of people as part of the support staff and the new staff that's coming in that just creates added expenses. And you've got a program, you know, that is now going, hey, how do I come up with money for revenue sharing while also paying two head coaches at the same time? I don't think you're going to see it in this cycle. I think it'll be one of the quietest off seasons when it comes to firing, and it already is. Because I think that, combined with the idea that the playoff is keeping some guys more, and you know, it gives Ryan Day a chance to go out and win games rather than face the music. You know, the playoff's going to also have people pumping the brakes. I think it's going to be a very quiet off season. Trent Bray at Oregon State talking about recruits and how they're reacting to Oregon State. It was signing day yesterday.
Yeah, it's been good on the recruiting trail for a couple of reasons. I think the development and what we've done since I've been here over the last 7 years on offense and defense, but for me particular on defense, the ability to produce and develop guys to have a chance to play at the next level. That's always intriguing to a young person. And then the success that we've had and where we're going in this new Pac-12 conference is exciting, not only for me, but recruits have responded well to it. It's really the only conference, you know, in the country that you can play regionally anymore. And so for a California kid, a Washington kid, an Oregon kid, the ability to, for your family to truly watch you play every weekend has been an intriguing thing for some of these guys.
I noticed in the early part of yesterday, I was tracking it very early from an Oregon State standpoint, that Oregon State was going heavy with high school recruits, right? Obviously, they signed 18 players, 17 high school players, and one junior college player, you know, at the start of the signing period yesterday. Also, when you look at those 18, 13 of them were offensive linemen, defensive linemen, or defensive backs. It was filling needs and getting guys that they right away could, you know, possibly slot into positions. I reached out to Deegan Rose, the quarterback at Clovis High School that is a class of 2026 kid. He said he's still engaged. He's coming to Oregon State. He's a year away from signing. But Deegan Rose telling me yesterday, you know, he likes what he sees, and he sees an opportunity to come in and possibly play early in his college career, which isn't a bad thing. Matt Campbell at Iowa State talking through about adversity. They're playing for a Big 12 championship against Arizona State.
I think every football season has adversity. And, you know, obviously we came upon it in early November. You know, we had some really tough injuries that hit us, and you know, some young guys had to step up. And, you know, I think we were able to weather the storm. A lot of the credit I would give for our football team is our senior leadership really helped navigate, you know, that little rough patch. And, you know, I really felt like we were able to get ourselves through it, and last 3 weeks really started to play good football again.
Yeah, look, Matt Campbell's a good coach. Iowa State, dangerous program. That'll be a great, highly entertaining Big 12 championship against Arizona State and Kenny Dillingham. I like ASU, though. I just think it's their year. Sometimes you get a team that just feels like it's their year. That's Arizona State and Dillingham. Texas Tech's coach, Joey McGuire, he brought out the heavy machinery and aimed it at the College Football Playoff Selection Committee.
Football right now is really screwed up, and I'm gonna kind of talk about that. It comes down to a patch, I guess, that's on your jersey. Because, now stick with me, if Texas wins the SEC, that means a Big 12 team from last year won the SEC. If Oregon wins the Big 10, that means a Pac-12 team won the Big 10. And if Arizona State, so that means a Pac-12 team won the Big 12. And then if SMU wins the ACC, that means an American team won the ACC. So I think it's absolutely embarrassing what this football committee and, you know, I mean, we got to back up what we need to do on the field so they get pissed off at me. They get pissed off at me, but it's absolutely embarrassing what they're doing to this conference.
Yeah, look, you got a lot of brand recognition going on out there. Look, the ACC, wow, they only had two teams make the Sweet 16 this year. Then we start to declare who's good and who's bad. I think that's going to happen with the playoff. I think we're going to get to the semifinal round, quarterfinal round, and we're suddenly going to go, oh, you know what? ACC was better than we thought. SMU's good. And we're going to look at the Big Ten. We might think differently. I'll tell you this. Everybody's ripping the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. I think they have a thankless job. I think they have a really tough task of having to come out week to week with rankings instead of once at the end of the season. And about the only party that's happy with them probably right now is the University of Oregon, which has been sitting at number one with no controversy since the beginning. J.J. Redick in the middle of a storm. The Lakers lose by 41 to the Heat. Here's J.J.
It's easy to not want the ownership, particularly when it's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed. We're all embarrassed. That's not. It's not a game that I thought we had the right fight, the right professionalism. You know, not sure what was lost in translation. There has to be some ownership on the court, and I'll take all the ownership in the world. This is my team, and I lead it, and I'm embarrassed.
I like that he's taking ownership. You know, it just, it's weird to me, and I can't understand. I don't understand the mentality. Maybe it's an 82-game season that does some of this, but it's just strange to me that a team that is, you know, it's a decent team. Like, you know, the Lakers are like a 500, little above 500 team in the NBA. That a team like that can show up on a given night and lose to another 500 team by 41 points. Steven, how do you explain that? You worked for the Blazers. Is it just a mentality, and sometimes a team just goes, hey, we're not playing tonight, or what happens?
Yeah, I think it's a couple things. One, it's the vulnerability of the three-point line. Sometimes the teams just get really hot, and then you know, your mindset goes away. They're also in Miami, so there might have been you know, a little bit of, we don't really care about this game. Let's just get this game over with. I also think
Do you think it was nightlife of Miami? Were the LA players out?
It could have been. I don't know. That is a thing. That's definitely a thing in the NBA. I also think, you know, with JJ, like, coaching matters, but it doesn't. JJ is an offensive genius, right? Well, his team's averaged 1 point less than the team did last season with Darvin Ham, who's a defensive genius. So I just think it's a combination of a three-point line, you know, long season travel. You know, they're in Miami. LeBron and the Lakers, like, they're not a great team. They're an average team, like you said. I think this happens for average teams. If you're an elite team, it doesn't really happen. So I think it's talent. I think it's three-pointers. I think it's nightlife.
It's almost like bowl season every week, every night in the NBA. Because in college football bowl season, we have to do a lot of, well, who really wants to win this game? You know, we start to think and have to get into the psychology of the team and what are they playing for and who's playing tonight. In the NBA, on a night-to-night basis, you kind of have to do that. Like, what are they playing for? Are they in this? Does this game mean something to them? You know, do you have a player who might be extra motivated and locked in tonight? Like, you have to evaluate that on a night-to-night basis in the NBA. It's weird. It's the only league that I think you do that in. Dan Lanning's coming up. Oregon football coach. I've got so many questions. He will face Penn State on Saturday. But first, he faces me in a one-on-one interview. Stick around.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I always like when we bring on guests right after I do a commercial for advanced hair and hair replacement. And then people always say, you're bald. Don't you know you're bald? Hey, I have a beautiful bald head. I'm comfortable with that. Dan Lanning, he's got a good head of hair. University of Oregon football coach, how you doing?
I'm so glad you said it, because I'm sitting here saying, wait a minute, what in the world? Come on, John. Like, what are we doing to plug for hair? Come on, man. But well, you did it to yourself. That's a great lesson there. Like, get yourself before somebody else can.
That's right. Well, I did. I saw you coming, man. I knew you were going to take my legs out.
Bring it up. Yeah. Yeah. I did it. Hey.
You got it. Hey. Hey, how was Thanksgiving for you? What did you get some family time at all? What was it like?
Yeah, we practiced in the morning, and then we had a meal there at the facility with our players, and then I had a high school friend in town and his wife and their kids. They came for the weekend to watch the game, and we did Thanksgiving together, and it was good, man. It was the meal made it to the table a little late, and hopefully Sophia's not listening. I'm sure she's not. But like, I grew up in the family where you kind of had Thanksgiving around lunch, right?
Yes,
like that,
yes.
Or, you know, maybe one, like you watch the parade in the morning, you watch some football games, but when football's playing, you're eating. Like, our meal came out long after the football games were over. Like, I want to say 8:45 is maybe my first bite of turkey at my house. Luckily that we had lunch at the facility, but we made it, and it was good. I got to hang out with family. It was a great day.
All right, so I know Anna's not listening, but I had to, because I was dealing with an Asian side of the family. The very first Thanksgiving, they brought seafood to the house, and I was like, no, we don't do crab, we don't do seafood, we're not doing hot pot. Like, this Thanksgiving is a turkey. I had to. Did you have any Asian food as part of your Thanksgiving?
We had, really the next day Sophia's family came in, and we definitely had some Asian cuisine here, some like beef short rib stuff, and set plia, some different Cambodian and dishes. It was good. It was great. I always love when her mom cooks. So
we'll
talk not your normal, yeah. You know, turkey Thanksgiving cuisine.
We'll talk some football in a second, but I got to ask you about signing day and recruiting, and it falls in the middle of all now this extended season that is getting longer and longer. How does that feel to you as far as rhythm is going when you have the signing day come kind of in the middle of, hey, you got a big game coming up?
I think I wouldn't say it was convenient, but if you can do it better than anybody else, then it works out. And, you know, recruiting is not like a one day. I think everybody watches it like signing day and they're like, oh, look, they got these guys to jump and flip. And like, that's not really how it works. I mean, you recruit year round, and we have a great staff that puts a lot of effort into getting the best players here. And, you know, several of those guys that maybe seem like flips on signing day were guys that we felt really comfortable about, you know, 3 months ago or 4 months ago. But you got to battle all the way down to the end. And, I'm really excited about the class that we brought in.
We had your 5-star Hawaiian Jaron Keawe Sagapolotele on yesterday. Oh, I got that. I got that all right, didn't I?
Well done.
And he said the same thing. He said that he talked to you every day over an extended period of time, and he was talking to your offensive coordinator for an extended period of time. So that is a long dance.
Yeah, we've been dating a while. Me and Jaron been dating for a while. So, it worked out. I'm really excited about him. You know, just told him at the end, man, follow your heart. Like, what's that telling you? Like, that doesn't lie to you. And if it's not us, then it's not us. But if it is, like, dang, man, what an opportunity, right, to go play at the University of Oregon and compete for, championships. Like, isn't that what you want to sign up for? So, and that sounds like that's what he wanted. So it worked out.
I am, you know, I'm looking at these teams that are really good and separating, and you're one of them. But, you know, I think, you know, you have teams that have elite playmakers, and then you have difference-making depth within that. I think there's a problem there that nobody is talking about that you are navigating. I don't know if it's a problem, but when you have a lot of depth and a lot of guys who have a lot of stars, how do you keep those guys on the sideline that maybe aren't getting the reps they're used to getting as they're growing up? How do you keep those guys engaged and ready and happy?
Well, I think it's important as a coach. Like, your job is to make sure that you're creating growth in your program. And ultimately, the question I always ask our players is, do you feel like you're getting better at football? Because that's the part that matters. Like, are you getting better at football? And if you are, that means you'll be ready for your opportunity when it comes. And, and not everybody's path is the same. It's going to look different. But I think as long as you're honest and really focused on development with your players, the rest kind of, you know, everything else takes care of itself. And it doesn't always look the same. Everybody's going to be on a different journey. But, you know, our job is to try to go get the best players that we can possibly get, put them in the best position to be successful. Create great competition with our program. Like, I'm certainly convinced that some of our players have performed a lot better because there's other really good players at their position. They're like, okay, I got to go to work. And that's how it works, man. I want to work a little bit harder because of the coaches that are on our staff. And it's like, okay, I'm not going to let this guy show me up, right? And that's the challenge. And some people respond to that and some don't. But the ones that do, those are the guys you focus on, right?
You got to smash up a football helmet with a sledgehammer. Was that a catharsis? Was that a good feeling to smash up a helmet or smash something in general?
Yeah, I saw you said that word last week at some point, and I was like, "What's that? What's that mean?" I don't, you know. So by definition,
yeah.
Can you give it to me? Like, catharsis? Can you give that one to me?
Well, it's a release where you're having a breakthrough, where you're getting relief from something. It's like you have these strong emotions inside of you that finally get to come out. Like, it's, you know, it's that moment where you strike that helmet with a sledgehammer and you're like, that feels good.
Yeah. I don't know if I felt that moment in that moment, but
right.
That night I probably felt that moment. Yeah. It's good to go up there and beat the team up north.
You know, you're not the first Oregon coach to try to take a sledgehammer to a helmet. Did you know that?
I didn't. Talk to me.
All right. Mike Bellotti did it years ago. I'm going to say it was circa 2002, 2003. I'm dating myself now, but he tried to hit the helmet and he hit it with the sledgehammer and the helmet didn't break. It just shot like a watermelon seed across the locker room and the players all had to scatter. Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna reach out to Bellotti. I'll find out exactly what happened.
But this is great. So Mike and I talked, you know, we talk a good amount, and he's always great. Like after games, I've always asked him, hey, watch it. Just tell me what you see. Doesn't mean I'm going to agree with it, but let me know what you see. Not that I don't value your opinion, John, but right. I like to know what Mike thinks.
Right.
Right. So he'll hit me, and, you know, I don't think it's a secret. We've struggled at times in the second half this year. And I was like, hey, you know, give me some thoughts, man. What have you done in the past? And again, sometimes I take it and say, thanks a lot, but I do really value coach's opinion. And he mentioned smashing stuff at halftime. And I was like, okay, so you think that's successful? And he goes, oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I would – I think you need to have him on and ask him about what kind of things that he what kind of things did he smash at halftime? Because it sounds like – what's that comedian, Gallagher?
Gallagher,
like it, it sounds like Blatty was just in there just smashing stuff. I almost said a bad word. Smashing stuff right and left. And I said, okay. I mean, and we haven't done it yet this year. So, you know, maybe we should do it more. But I didn't know that he'd done helmets yet.
Yeah, he tried it. He tried it.
It wasn't successful. So I don't know if you know this or not. I wasn't the one smashing the helmet. So I thought through it, and I was ready to smash the helmet. I was ready to roll. I had brought it up to, Marshall, our chief of staff, and a couple other people on our staff earlier in the week. I said, you know, I think it's really important we start right the second half. I think this would be – it kind of fits our theme and some of the stuff we're talking about. So see if you can give me a helmet. And I was planning on it. Up until that day, I was planning on it. And then looking out my window, you know, there's this guy that I always see out there banging a sledgehammer on the tires. He's a workout warrior, and that's our strength coach, Wilson Love. Uh-huh. I was like, look, I could go in here, and I kind of pictured all those moments that you just talked about.
Right.
With Lottie, like you're hitting something. What if the helmet doesn't break? Like that would be frustrating, right? Like these helmets are strong nowadays. So I was like, hey, Wilson, I mean, how confident do you feel? He's like, coach, I got it. I can do that. And he did. I mean, that was some really successful smashing by Wilson. So best guy I've seen with a sledgehammer. You know, it was impressive. I wasn't wearing the helmet at the time.
I just found my notes on it from Bilotti. I wrote about this in 2018. I'm going to send it to you. But he tried in the pregame to smash a Stanford helmet with a sledgehammer, and it didn't work. It squirted out like a seed. And so it shot across the room. And then he also did it at halftime at another game. So I think you're right. I'm going to ask him what he was smashing up.
I'm telling you. This is going to make a great book. Yeah, great book.
Sounds like it.
Maybe it could turn into like a cookbook too, like something like, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's something here. We should do something with this.
All right, I'm on it. I had Gallagher on the show too once. Like I've had everybody on the show. Yeah, I had him on the show years ago. He came in studio. Like he showed up and hung out. Wow. And I realized in that moment, like, he made a career out of that watermelon and that hammer. Like, it was just, you know, it was it.
That was a hell of a comedian, but now that we know that, I mean, he could have been an NFL football coach.
Yep,
right? Could have. This whole time.
Could have been. All right, give me an idea. You're going into this game on Saturday. You're watching film of Penn State. They're very physical. You guys are physical. It feels like it'll be a tug of war at times. What do you see on film?
Yeah, I'm excited about this matchup. It's certainly a tough team to defend. They got, you know, great weapons on offense, you know, with their tight end and their running backs and their quarterback and, you know, physical team. And then I think their scheme's really unique. I don't think we've played anybody that does quite what they do on offense, you know, this season. So that's something else that kind of really sticks out to me. And then defensively, you know, they're relentless. They're a pressure-oriented team. They got great pass rushers. They got a great, great safety. They got some really talented players. So this will be a great matchup for us. We're certainly excited about it.
The playoff selection committee, everybody's bitching about it, belly aching about it. Like, you guys seem like you're the only ones happy with them because, you know, every week you come out, you're at one, you probably don't even care because it doesn't matter. But, you know, as coaches
watched it.
You haven't? You're the only person who hasn't.
No, I mean, like, that's on Tuesdays anyway, isn't it? Aren't we working on Tuesdays?
Yeah, it is. And it also, I happen to be on air at the time. And, you know, apologies to ESPN, but those guys are SEC honks. And so all they do is they talk about how great the SEC is. And, you know, to your face, they're going to tell you how great you are. But behind your back, they're going to tell you how much they love those SEC teams. You know that. You were in the SEC.
They pay the bills, right? I mean, doesn't
That's
the SEC pay their bills? I mean, who's their contract with? Is it ESPN's contract?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so that's how it works. Like, let's not pretend like it doesn't work different than that. But, you know, there's a secret to all that, John. Just win. Just win. They can't deny you if you just win. You can't complain if you just win. So, you know, if you lose three games, shame on you, right? If you lose two, shame on you, right? Win.
What did you learn at Georgia watching Kirby Smart and watching those Georgia teams kind of navigate a postseason?
Well, I mean, it's different now than it was then because, you know, at that point you were talking about, you know, say you want to go play in a championship game. You're talking about, okay, let's go win this bowl game, and then you're in the championship game. So it's a little bit longer path now than it was then. But, I mean, what I learned, I had the same things that created success in the football season create success, you know, in the postseason. There's an opportunity for a refresh there depending on time, and that's going to be a little bit different this year than there was in the past because these games are going to be a little bit closer together. But, you know, a chance to, you know, regroup, rehabilitate, all those things before you get into some of those bowl games. And then, you know, the other piece of that is that a lot of the fundamental technique that matters so early in the beginning of the season starts to fade at the end. And teams that don't play fundamentally sound, I'm talking about like tackle well, and catch the ball well, and block well, like that's what really shows up in these games. It's not as much about the wrinkles. It's really a lot about those details in postseason play.
Guys, you had Jordan Burch out on the field. You had Tez Johnson catching passes. Feels like this season, one of the benefits of a long season is you're getting some guys back.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. Best version of us is the healthy version of us. And what's great is we've got, you know, some really talented players that have done a great job in their place. So I don't think you look at our team and say, oh, it looks completely different without those guys. But certainly we are a better team with them. So glad to have them back.
NIL world, there are some schools out there that are in some trouble where some players are saying, hey, we didn't get the money that we were promised. And even yesterday when I was talking to the quarterback who's committed to you guys, you know, I said, how did you navigate that as a family? Because you have somebody in your family who knows how to speak NIL, and, you know, how do you, or do you have to go hire somebody? And he says, well, we hired an agency. And as a coach, are you in the middle of that, or is that between the player and the agency and the collective at this point? Because it may change in a year or two.
Yeah. I'm certainly in the middle of it. You wear every hat, right? If you're going to go cook a meal, you want to, you know, buy the groceries, right? So, I mean, you're involved in every piece of that, and that's part of college football right now. That's the landscape that we can be in right now. So you have to navigate that, understand that, what it looks like, you know, for you and your team.
Your dad is going to Indianapolis, and I know this because he said, hey, what are you doing Saturday? He wants to get together and have coffee because he says, you know, my kid's going to be busy, game day stuff.
I know he didn't say that. My dad doesn't drink coffee.
Well, I'm getting coffee with him. So he's going to have
maybe Diet Coke or something. Yeah. Okay.
So we're going to sit down and, you know, at his hotel or whatever and just say for a hello. I enjoy him. You got a cool dad who can talk about a number of different things. His value system is great. He just, I got to say, of all the coaches that I've covered, I've never met a better dad who's, and I can see how proud he is of you.
Well, my dad's a stud. You know, fun fact, he just recently celebrated a birthday right there before Thanksgiving, November 27th. And do you know who he shares that birthday with?
No.
Bill Nye, the science guy. And my dad was a science teacher.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's kind of a big deal in our family. Pretty cool. Wow. I've met Bill Nye, by the way. Do you remember Bill Nye?
Yeah. Coolest geek out there. Because in the position you're in now, because I know, like, you got a chance to, you saw Michael Jordan at the championship game last year, Derek Jeter, and you get to see some cool
friends,
people.
Yeah.
Do you get starstruck? Do you have a moment where you're like, oh, wow?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I was just sitting here telling you about Bill Nye. Like, I don't know what I'd do if I saw Gallagher tomorrow. That'd be pretty cool. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Wow.
The thing at Gallagher was he was so much older than I remembered him. Like, because we remember him growing up and he had dark hair, and all of a sudden, here was a gray-haired guy. And I was like, man, he needs to hang this up. Like, he, you know, it was several.
Did he always have the skullet? Did he always have, like, the bald at the top, long hair on the sides?
He
that's
did.
The only version I remember.
Yep. It's just saying he wore that hat. You know, he looked like he was delivering a paper or something. Like, he's a cartoon character. I don't know. Listen, I will see you in Indy. And I'm excited to see you guys play. I'll be with you throughout the postseason. But I appreciate you coming on and talking to our listeners. And congrats so far. Keep it going.
All right. I appreciate you, John. Have a good one.
No questions for me. Usually you get one in.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't really plan this out.
Nothing.
I'll get you next week.
Next time.
I'm on next. I don't know when. Okay. Whenever I'm on next, we'll link up.
All right, we'll talk to you later. There he goes, Dan Lanning, Oregon coach, on his way. I have to check. See, I'm having coffee with Don Lanning Saturday morning. Like, apparently Don's not going to have coffee. Now, you heard it here first. Dan Lanning and the Ducks against Penn State. Tell me what you think the key to the game is or what you're curious to find out. And if you're a Duck fan, are you going to the game? I kind of wonder, there are a couple of charters that are flying out to Indianapolis, and I wonder if the diehard Duck fans that usually travel to this kind of game are holding back going, hey, we're going to wait for the Rose Bowl, or hey, we're going to wait for the national semifinal, or hey, I want to be able to go to the championship game. How are you approaching that as a family? How far can this Oregon team go? I happen to think, I said it yesterday on the show, this is an Oregon team that can win it. And I've never felt that way before, that like, I looked at Oregon in prior years in 2011 and 2015, and I thought, SEC team, they're up against Ohio State. If they win, it would be like a huge, it would be an upset, you know. This one doesn't feel like an upset to me. Like, you know, there are several teams, there's a handful of teams that I think can win it. Oregon's one of them. And you heard from Dan Lanning there, and I want you to tell me what you heard in his voice. He seems very comfortable. Him talking about smashing that Washington helmet. Oh, the Husky fans. Softy was so fired up about that. The Husky honks were fired up about Dan Lanning smashing that helmet or having someone smash the helmet at halftime. But that little tidbit he gave us about Mike Bellotti, come on, that's a good story. 503-417-7575. You tell me what you heard there. And if you're a Duck fan, I want to hear from you. Are you going to the game, not going to the game? Are you holding back? Give me your philosophy as it pertains to traveling to this game. You got the bald-faced truth. Leave it here.
Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, you heard Dan Lanning last segment, Oregon football coach. He's off to Indianapolis where he'll play Penn State. You notice I don't get too far into the weeds on the X's and the O's. It's not like we're going to get Dan Lanning to reveal his game plan or tell us where they are kicking off, or to tell us what they're going to do on third and short or fourth and short. And he's not going to give us any of that, right? That he's saving that. There's no advantage to that. But what we do gather from an interview like that is kind of his general state of mind and him talking about the Washington game. And full disclosure, I think I can share this now because he kind of brought it up. I wrote a column a couple of days before the Washington game saying, you know, will Dan Lanning get a catharsis in this game? And I got a text from Dan Lanning saying, with a screenshot of the word catharsis, and he said I had to look it up. And so it's why I slipped it into the interview early. I wasn't going to say and tell the story, but I opened the door for him and he grabbed it and said, hey, I didn't know what it was. Can you tell me what that word means? And we talk about it in a second, but there was definitely a catharsis in beating Washington. As Rich Brooks told me earlier this week, the former Oregon coach, he said Dan Lanning he was haunted by Washington. I like that better. He's being haunted by Washington and he finally got rid of the Washington haunting and moved on to something else. But you could hear how relaxed he is, and I think he knows he's got the better team. I think he knows if they play clean against Penn State, they win. I think he knows they're the one seed. He makes the comment about, you know, if we just, you know, all you got to do if you want to avoid controversy is just win. Just really, really rich stuff from Dan Lanning, and I would love to hear what you thought of that interview at 503-417-7575. Steven, you were listening as Lanning was talking. I think we get a different interview than anybody gets with Dan Lanning. I think we get him relaxed. I think he's comfortable on this show. I think he trusts me. And I think he is willing to have a normal conversation.
Yeah, incredible stuff. Incredible stuff for Dan Lanin. You're right. He sounded relaxed, but he sounded ready to go. I love the comments that he had about the CFP. Just win. You don't have to worry about it. You know, we all want to complain about it. But if you win the games, John, you're in the college football playoff. It's great. It's also great that he acknowledged, like, look, the SEC is going to get talked about by the ESPN. That's what it is. He also talked about that he wants Thanksgiving early in the day. Coach Vaughn, we go to Coach Vaughn's house. We have it around 1 o'clock. I'm with him. Have it early in the day. Like, you learn a lot about the guy in general, not just on the football field, but as a person. Great guy off the field. It seems like, man, it's just great interview right there.
I have heard him interviewed by other people, and I don't hear that Dan Lanin when those other interviews. I hear him holding back. I hear him kind of no trust. And I think some of it stems from when he first arrived in Eugene. You know, I got on the phone with him very early. We had a long conversation. And it's interesting, when I left the Oregonian, he was one of the first people who reached out to me and said, hey, where are you going? And I said, I'm not going anywhere. I said, I'm going to continue to cover you. I'm launching johnconzano.com. I'll be there. And he was like, okay, fine. And it was interesting to me that both he and Jonathan Smith did the same thing. They're like, where are you going? Like, you know, they were both kind of, wait a minute. And so I think it was because we have a professional relationship. And I only brought up the idea that the fact that I'm, you know, his dad had reached out to me and said, hey, I'm going to be in Indy. Love to talk to you. I sat down with his dad and his mom last season before one game and just kind of chatted with them. And I think it's interesting to kind of get to know his family and his parents, because both his mom and dad are teachers, and he mentioned his dad being a science teacher. That's such an interesting little tidbit there of landing as a science teacher. But I'm just hearing in that interview, like, Steven, tell me if I'm wrong. He's comfortable right now. He is not nervous. He doesn't feel stressed out. I don't hear it in his voice. I hear a super chill, relaxed, confident Dan Lanin, and he had one point where he was like, talking about recruiting, talking about, you know, the job and, you know, what he tells the kids, you know, follow your heart. Like, he's not pressing. He's not stressing.
No. And he's very confident. And he even mentioned that, you know, what he's talking about. You asked about recruiting, and he goes, you know, people take it so seriously on that last day about the flips. He's like, but when you're good at it, you know what's going to happen. Like, that was his comment of, yeah, we knew these guys are going to flip. Like, we were confident in it, so why? It's not even a surprise to us. Like, you're right. He's in a spot right now, John, where he is getting noticed by everybody. You know, every video that he puts out with the motivational stuff he's putting out, the helmet he talked about, great stories you had with him about Bilotti smashing helmets, and now, you know, he's smashing helmets. Just, he is very comfortable with himself, and he's very comfortable with himself at Oregon, and he's made that clear. And I think, you know, next time a job comes open and Dan Lanning's name is out there, I think everyone, there's no reason to even talk about it, because he's very comfortable with where he's at, and he's thriving right now in Eugene.
I think it'll be interesting. If they win Saturday, they become the Big Ten champion in their first season in the Big Ten Conference. They also improved to 13-0, and it's not lost on me that Oregon football is 12-0, Oregon men's basketball is 9-0. They are 21-0 together. Now, I'm looking at the Oregon basketball schedule. They've got a game against UCLA coming up this weekend that could be dicey. UCLA 7-1, although not ranked. And then they've got Arizona coming up. I think the basketball team, If they can get to 11-0, it'll be a really interesting race to see who loses the game first. Because the Oregon men's basketball schedule after the Arizona game gets a little softer, and I could see them getting to like 15 or 16-0 if it comes to that. But I think there's a bet out there, like a gentleman's bet out there, like who loses a game first, basketball or football? Do you have a sense on that?
I think so, yeah. I mean, because he's very he's acknowledged the basketball team numerous times, and so he's very aware of what's going on, and his team is ready every single game to play. So I think you're right
on this
one.
We'll see. Mark in Beaverton. Mark, tell me what you heard. Thanks for joining.
Oh, man. John, okay, I kid you not, I have a huge bromance with the Dan Lanin. I'm going to say it right here on the air. Huge bromance. I mean, okay, I remember when the Ducks were 12-0, when Chip was the coach, but this is different because we didn't know anything about Chip's family, his parents, his, I think it was married at the time, but listening to your interviews with Dan, it's like, we know the guy, but we want to know him better. Yeah. Man, if you ever had drinks with him, like you did with Bill Shanley at the auction, I kid you not, my family and I would buy that. I mean, if that's, I know the guy's busy and you are too, but if there is ever a way that that could happen, it's like, I would say, don't even put it on the auction. Just call me. And
what we're trying to do is get him to play in the celebrity golf tournament because now he's expressed an interest in golf. Craig and West Lynn, you got about a minute, Craig.
John, great interview with Dan Lanning. You're right. You're absolutely right. When I listen to him talking to you, it's like a different dude, man. It's like, this is Dan Lanning. I have to like stop and question it because he just sounds so open and really relaxed, like you said. Very quickly, I mean, the playoffs is a disaster. Every time they try to improve it, they take it the wrong direction. The better system would be take your top four bowls, Rose, Orange, Sugar, Fiesta, take the winners from those four games, put them into a playoff. And
yeah, we're rolling out of time here, but you're right in that I think we're going to see tweaks, and we're going to see the SEC and the Big Ten in particular demand tweaks.
North. BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
So Mike Bellotti, I'm going back through my notes during the commercial breaks, getting back to these helmet-smashing episodes. Mike Bellotti brought out sledgehammers and other materials to smash up numerous times over the years. So I find it interesting that Dan Lanning got the idea from Mike Bellotti. But Bellotti got the sledgehammer out in 2008 at the Holiday Bowl. Remember, Oregon beat Oklahoma State 42-31? Bellotti smashing things up. One of his former players was listening to the Dan Lanning interview and said he remembers Bellotti trying to kick a cooler filled with ice and Gatorades. And it during the UCLA game that same season, 2008. But the Gatorades and the ice, they didn't budge. And there's nothing funnier than seeing somebody who's angry try to kick something and it doesn't budge. So apparently Bellotti kicked this cooler that was filled with ice and Gatorades. It doesn't move. So then he turns and he kicks a box of those chewy bars. And they went everywhere in the locker room. And the part of that episode that the player who texted me remembers is Bellotti shouting something to the effect of, you guys need to stop being a bunch of bleepity bleeps out there. That's all I can say. It's radio. Really good stuff. And Lanning, I think, was wise to put his strength and conditioning coach on the task of sledgehammering that helmet, because you don't want to be the guy sledgehammering the helmet if it doesn't break or if it goes spitting like a watermelon seed across the locker room and everybody laughs. Brings us to the 5 at 5. Great show today. 5 at 5. Let's do it.
The 5 at 5. Number one.
Well, John, speaking of head coaches, North Carolina, they're looking for a head coach. And apparently, according to numerous sources, been confirmed, Bill Belichick, the former New England Patriot coach, he is interviewed for the North Carolina job. Now, Belichick, 72 years old, He would be replacing Mac Brown, who just got fired, who was 73 years old. What do you think of this? I mean, I think...
No.
But if he wants, if he's interested, he got to at least interview him, right?
Yeah, you interview him. You interview him as a courtesy and out of respect for Bill Belichick, six Super Bowl championships. But you don't correct course by saying Mac Brown out of touch, 73, too old for this NIL portal era. You don't course correct by going to 72-year-old. You have to go young. I think Carolina will go young. They'll go cool. They'll go Kenny Dillingham-like. Not Kenny. He's not leaving Arizona State. They'll go someone like that. Will Stein. Somebody like that. And I'm not saying Stein's leaving Oregon, but they're going to go for a young guy who can recruit and has got a lot of energy. That's how you course correct when you are getting rid of a coach. You don't go, well, we're going younger. We're going to 72 now. It's not that doesn't that's not how it works. But you gotta interview Belichick out of respect. And you listen to him. And if anything, you create a connection with him and a resource with him. But I don't think he's the hire for North Carolina. And I also think it's interesting that the first to report that was like the Tar Heel student paper. And I think it makes North Carolina fans feel wanted and feel good and feel like their program. Oh, Belichick. Yeah. But if you're going to make that kind of move, like we've seen some schools that will go outside the box and grab, you know, a Jerry Glanville well after his time, or a Jerry Tarkanian after his time, or a Bobby Knight late in his career. You've seen schools that do that, but those are outlier schools. North Carolina, not an outlier school, not even from a football perspective. They're too much of a blue blood to make that kind of move. I would be surprised if Belichick's their guy. I think that they're just interviewing him. That's my take.
Number two.
UCLA, they are firing offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy after one season. It was just a couple of years ago where Bieniemy was the hot coordinator of the NFL, now being fired by UCLA. Bruins ranked 126th nationally among teams and scoring only 18 per game, but his agent has already flipped the story. He told ESPN that Bieniemy's exit was previously planned, that the plan was always to return to the NFL in 2025, so he's flipping it in a positive way. Indiana quarterback coach Tino Sinceri has emerged as the target to replace Bieniemy, sources told Pete Stamble, and Sinceri will remain with Indiana throughout the college football playoff as well, and then reportedly go over to UCLA.
Look, this whole UCLA staff was kind of thrown together late in the cycle last year. Bieniemy, not a good hire. UCLA, Deshaun Foster, arguable whether that's a good hire, but I thought he did good enough to keep his job this season. I expected like three wins and not a whole lot of success down the stretch. And UCLA got competitive. They stayed in games and they were relevant. And all the way up until the last game of the season when they were even playing, you know, UCLA, that was a 19-13 game. And they beat Fresno State to finish 5-7. That's about two wins better than I thought they'd be. But I thought UCLA really turned a corner in the middle of the season. It was maybe like the game against Iowa. They beat Iowa 20-17. They were in the game against Minnesota 21-17. They didn't get blown off the field by Penn State. It was a 27-11 game. I think Bieniemy was a problem on offense. They couldn't score any points. That was evident. We'll see if the next guy in can get that done.
Number three.
Well, the Portland Athletics, I mean, the Oakland Athletics, John, they just made a deal. And I find this interesting timing because we were talking about yesterday, John Fisher never overpaying for guys or never buying players, spending his money. Well, they signed right-handed pitcher Luis Severino to a franchise history largest guarantee, 3 years, $67 million. Does it change your mind? Do you want the A's now to come to Portland now that they're spending a little bit of money?
Well, I think they're spending money thinking that, you know, they got to draw some fans in Sacramento. They've got to problem there and that they don't have a home base, and if they're bad they don't have any real connection to the market, so they've got to be palatable this next season to draw. And you know, granted they don't have a huge stadium that they're playing in, they're also trying to ramp up for their launch in Vegas that should come 3 years from now or whatever, allegedly. It doesn't change my mind, but I'm still on the fence with it, because on one hand there's only so many of those teams. And if you have a chance to get one, do you get one knowing that you're getting a bad owner and knowing that, hey, eventually someone else will own the team. He won't live forever. He won't stay in business there forever. And so do you just take it knowing that someday you can kind of turn that into something else? or do you wait for expansion? And maybe the 30 or 40% chance that you get the team in expansion. I think I would probably lean towards Steven. If the A's are available and they want to come to Portland, you open your arms, you take them, and you hope John Fisher opens his checkbook just a little bit.
Number four.
A little bit of sad news. Woj, Adrian Wojnarowski, he revealed that he has been diagnosed with prostate cancer. Of course, Woj has been spent more than two decades as one of the most plugged-in guys in the NBA, but he said doctors did biopsy on him and confirmed that it was early-stage cancer for him. Woj said he knew about the diagnosis before retiring from ESPN. It wasn't the exact reason, but he had another sad one, is that he was friends with Chris Mortensen, and he said he was surprised and stunned at how many people did not show up at Mort's Memorial in Arkansas. He said he may remember that this job isn't everything. Woj, only 55. He also said the money that he was making wasn't significant enough and a good enough reason to stay with ESPN. Of course, now he is the general manager of St. Bonaventure's men's basketball team, who 8-1, pretty good season.
I worked in a job at the Fresno Bee where I replaced Adrian Wojnarowski when he left. He was the sports columnist at the Fresno Bee. I came after him. I know what he was making. I know what I was making. And I know approximately what he was getting at ESPN. He never expected, I think, or anticipated that he would rise to the level that he was making seven figures to be a sports personality or sports reporter. And so I think he stayed there and he did that. He did it at a high level for a long enough time that money did not become a motivating factor for him. And I don't think money ever was a motivating factor. Even when he wrote the books that he has written, like The Miracle of St. Anthony is a great book. It's a great book. It's not the book that was highly marketable that Adrian could have written, but he wrote the best possible book. And so good for him finding what's next.
Number five.
I thought this was funny. Lonzo Ball, he's coming out and talking about the Big Baller brand and the shoes that they made and how bad they were.
Gosh.
Because it led to a lot of his injuries, he actually thought. He said it's a possibility that's what led to injuries. He described those shoes as kickball shoes, John. I thought that was pretty funny. So Lonzo kind of trashing the Big Baller brand now.
Well, it's not unlike Rich Brooks, who this week told me that Bill Bowerman at Oregon brought some early waffle-soled football shoes to a practice in the late 1970s at Oregon and wanted them to wear them in games. And Brooks told me they lasted one practice before the soles ripped away from the canvas top of the shoe. Of course, Nike goes on to have a big presence in football, and Oregon now all Nike'd out. But that's how the story goes. We're back tomorrow with another great show. Grab the podcast and have a good evening.